Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 5th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
A lot of action in the markets today. Unfortunately, it wasn't in the gold market. It did try. We had a high of 1294, and it seems to be settling out right around that level, 1289 on the day. You have silver down 34 cents at 1989. Platinum was down $9 at 1459, along with palladium down 10 at $847. The USDX today is trading considerably stronger, 0.21 at 81.52. And again, crude oil got hit once again, down 85 at 97.44. In the paper markets today, they had a pretty big sell-off today. Most of the most of them were down at one point in time at one, you know, about 1% on the day. Let's bring up those numbers. They did come back from the lows. You have the Dow down 140 at 16,429. The NASDAQ was down 31 at 43.52. The S&P was down 18 at 19.20. And the 10-year is still down 0.01, yielding 2.48%. So you had a pretty big sell-off on the day. It really started last week when we were down a couple hundred points on one day. And everybody's trying to second guess, so, you know, what is the problem? Is it just oversold? People taking profits? A little bit of this, a little bit of that. And last week when it was first down, I said I thought it had to do with Russia. I just believe it's the markets aren't going to – they're not – they won't hold when you have a situation if it gets more heated coming out of Russia, and certainly with the new sanctions that Europe has placed on Russia last week. That's when we saw the big drop. And then today, Putin came out, and he certainly has said that, you know, we need to have a response to these Western sanctions. He ordered his government to draft, and yeah, it could be maybe it's a letter and it's no big deal, you know, and that's how we have to look at it. But he said to draft a response to unacceptable Western sanctions over Moscow's perceived backing of pro-Kremlin rebels, of course, in Ukraine. He says they do have to move carefully because they don't want to hurt the Russians anymore. And, of course, this does involve their oil structure, loans, and their airports. Some of their airlines are shutting down. for various reasons, because he can't get funding from the banks. And so perhaps there'd be some sort of sanction now that they wouldn't allow him to fly over their Russian airspace.
Allow who to fly over Russian airspace?
The European nations.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that they would keep them from flying over their airspace. But we'll just have to wait and see what their response is going to be. They have some top state-held firms that have seen their access to Western borrowing markets that have been severely restricted, and face a possible freeze on trade of their shares on both the European and New York exchanges. Russia has a low-cost airline, Dobrolet, not Chevrolet, but Dobrolet. I'm assuming that's how it is pronounced. They're the ones that have been forced to ground all of its flights because of the EU sanctions hitting its leases for their Boeing aircraft. That's just one of the sanctions. So these sanctions that they placed last week are a little bit more deeper and certainly a little more hurtful to Russia than the first ones that were just pretty much just placed on some of their well-to-do folks.
I think the problem they've got is these sanctions are perhaps going to escalate out of control.
I think so.
Unless somebody steps in and says, okay, enough. The sanctions get deep enough, and perhaps both sides are going to recognize that, look, we've got to cut a deal on this thing and be done with it. And if they don't cut that deal, then what's going to happen? How far can this escalate, or at what point does one side just completely surrender to the other? And I don't think we're going to see complete surrender based on mere sanctions. I mean, they've either got to negotiate, or they just allow this to slide until somebody starts shooting at each other. And it's one of the things that's suspicious about this is who is actually motivating these sanctions. And it is the United States. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of weeks ago, the United States was complaining that they would have to go, and it was right before the loss of flight MH17. Just in the day, just a couple of days before that, they were complaining that the government of the United States wanted to impose more sanctions on Russia, but Europe didn't want to go along. And therefore, the United States had to impose those sanctions unilaterally, which was evidence of lost power for the United States, insofar as Europe was not just following along and doing what they were told. All right, Europe was no longer willing to be U.S. lapdog. Well, I know that, and they are in the aftermath of knocking Malaysian flight MH17 out of the air. That is apparently the pivotal event that caused Europe to say, wait a second, we will impose sanctions on Russia. And the implication is that our government is, from my perspective, is that our government is the one that keeps on beating this situation and causing more sanctions. And it's catching fire now, where Europe is sanctioning Russia. They didn't want to, but they are. Russia is now talking about retaliation, at least in part, against Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder, is this a situation that's out of control, or is this a situation that's being manipulated to drive a wedge between Europe and Russia?
Well, either way is not good news. I mean,
it's not good news.
It's major impacts. I mean, not just there, but everywhere, and even here at home. So it is.
You know, one of the things about these sanctions, insofar as we continue to sanction Russia, and maybe we're getting away with it, right? Maybe our sanctions are having an effect. They were laughable at first. President Obama was sanctioning some of Putin's friends and denying them banking and travel privileges and one thing and another. And it was laughable what would start out. But now it's becoming serious. And we can speculate. How far can these sanctions go? point one. And point two, how long will the sanctions be remembered? It may be that there are people in Russia that are more than a little bit aggravated by these sanctions. And they're not necessarily going to forget about it. And the next time, they might not be able to do much about it right now. But it doesn't mean that they can't remember. And perhaps the next time there's an opportunity, they can try to get their pound of flesh back from the United States for the sanctions that are imposed now. Who knows? 90 days from now, 6 months from now, whatever. It may be that Russia has an opportunity to try to get even. All of this is dangerous business, and you have to wonder, what is this all about? We're looking at this happening. It's about the Ukraine. That's what this is all about. And how far does this go? You know, there's a point where you can ask, what are these sanctions really all about? And are the sanctions, the danger that's inherent in some of these sanctions, is it worth whatever's going on at the Ukraine? You know, maybe they could set up a third portion of the Ukraine that was just under United Nations control. Eastern Ukraine. Not really part of Ukraine anymore, not part of Russia. Something under UN control, and it might diffuse the situation. Where people could sit back and say, okay, all right, let's calm this down for a while. Let's ratchet this down and begin to be reasonable again. But this is potentially dangerous, so we'll watch. And it seems stupid. It's, you know, you can get into some things that are dangerous, and maybe they make a certain amount of sense. Maybe the danger is necessary because of the magnitude of the problem. But I'm not convinced that the danger that seems inherent in the situation in Ukraine is justified by the magnitude of the problem. There may be a way of settling this without everybody having to get shot at. And I don't know that people necessarily want that. There apparently are people that are saying, we need some gunfire.
Well, I think, too, I think the real reason why this whole situation was created has long been forgotten. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, when you have a fight, years and years of fighting, you kind of forget, well, what are we fighting about?
Killed the McCoys and the rest of that sort of thing. What are you fighting? I don't know. I don't know. Just your Hatfields, we're McCoys, we just fight, that's all.
So, you know, the real reasons have been long forgotten, and certainly with Russia's building up troops again at the Ukraine's border, it certainly is putting greater heightened fears that they're preparing to invade. And to me, that would be the answer to their, to the sanctions. I mean, they're just going to go ahead and do what they need to do.
They're worried if they do. They're not going to just do what they want to do on this situation, because everybody, I think these sanctions are biting. All right. Everyone is in there. People are wondering, how bad can this get? Do they really want to do it? They want to get it that bad. I don't think Russia will unilaterally invade Ukraine unless the Ukrainian government is leaning too hard on the Russian, on the rebels in eastern Ukraine who are pro-Russia, and they want out of Ukraine. If it becomes too violent, too many people are being killed, Russia will use that as an excuse to invade.
I don't know.
I don't think they'll just say, all right, here we come. I don't care. We don't need an excuse. We're just going to do it.
Well, perhaps also depends on support that he receives from any other country will give him, if he's going to be breaking relationships by continuing, he probably won't take it to the next level. But if he's got support.
Do you know when he could take it to the next level? Right now, Russia supplies about a third, if I understand correctly, about a third of the natural gas that's used in the European Union. If push comes to shove and Russia decides to turn off the spigot, now wouldn't necessarily make a lot of difference because it's good old summertime. But you get a little further into the year, get a couple more months into the year, and it's going to start to quit cold in the European Union, and they're going to need that natural gas. So you could argue, you could look at it and sit back and say, well, Russia's influence in this matter is going to increase over the next several months. When we get into wintertime, European Union is not going to want to sanction Russia. They don't want to take a chance on losing their natural gas, and Russia will hold Trump. But not right now. In the summertime, they don't. So as someone, if that were true, if that's, you know, not just a theory in my mind, but if it were true, if there were a basis for that, then are people in our government, for example, trying to push these sanctions now, during the summertime, because right now Russia's influence is minimal on Europe because they don't need that natural gas so much. But if they don't get this resolved by, say, October, November, then it's going to perhaps start to go back in Russia, move back in Russia's favor, and the European Union will say, we don't want any more sanctions. That implies we've got August, September, October, maybe 3 more months of serious sanctions and push and shove in Ukraine. And then, you know, starting October, November, we may see Russia's strength improve, and that may cause this thing. Maybe it'll just be settled. I don't know. It's just bizarre, and it's crazy, and it's like a couple of kids. He did it first, Mom. He pushed me first. The whole thing becomes, you know, you would think we could find some adults who could settle us. But the truth is we can't, because some of the adults want it. This isn't just confusion. This isn't just a failure to communicate. From my perspective, some of the alleged adults in this situation, they want this crisis. Somebody's making money off of it. Somebody's profiting in terms of power or money or whatever. And somebody wants this crisis, and therefore it'll persist. So, strange, unsettling, unnerving. Hope it doesn't turn into something really tremendously tragic, but certainly worth watching.
Okay. We do have a caller. We have Ivan on the line.
Hello, Ivan. What's up?
Well, I hear you are talking about Ukraine, so I'll try to chime in a little. What you said yesterday about it, 400 troops crossed over to the Russian lines.
Yeah, I remember.
My point is that a lot of the troopers, okay, a lot of the soldiers probably are of Russian, okay, and they probably were not willing to fight the resistance.
What you're saying, we don't have good sound quality right now, Ivan, but I believe what you're saying is that many of these 400 soldiers who were Ukraine soldiers, they're soldiers for the Ukraine government, but they were of Russian ethnic background, and they were saying they didn't want to fight against the Russian people within the Ukraine, and therefore they were going to Russia. It wasn't Ukrainians per se, it was mostly Russians that quit the Russian,
right,
or quit the Ukraine army and moved to Russia.
Yeah, they were, put to the into the army, while it was still under Russian control, I guess they didn't mind. But once it started to break up, a lot of them then just kind of scampered away and didn't want it to fight again their own brethren, who were, after the revolution and during the Holodomor, where the 11 million died, a lot of Russians were sent to populize Ukraine, okay?
Populate
Ukraine, right. And so anyway, they that's how they were there when this can of worm opened, okay?
Yeah.
And they stood with Russia all the time. They were Soviets, they were commies.
Yep.
And
I'll tell you what, we're going to, Yvonne, we're going to break and take some commercial announcements right now, and we will be back in a moment on Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom and Yvonne on the phone, and we will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Okay.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to remind the listeners we've got some great prices on all our gold coins. We've got some silver, Morgan Silver dollars, 1 ounce silver eagles, 90% quarters, lots of those in inventory. With the price down today, it's a great time to be picking some up. They should give us a call at 1-800-375-4188 and visit our website, DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, our radio programs. You can listen live, and you can listen to the archives right there from the website. I'm not sure if we still have Ivan on the line. Connection was bad, not very clear, and I'm not sure if...
Yeah, I still have me.
All right. Any final thoughts? Any final thoughts, Ivan?
Well, I just want to point it out that if you look what happened in Crimea, the Ukrainian recruits left. while the Russian recruits stayed in Crimea. And the Ukrainian recruits were bussed out. You know, they had to leave their arms, everything there, but they were allowed to leave Crimea, and that was it. So I think it was just this was just in the reverse, that the Russian recruits in Ukrainian army just wanted out, and that's what happened.
Do you think Russia regrets being tangled up with the people with a Russian ethnic background, the rebels in eastern Ukraine? I'm sure Russia is pleased to have regained control of Crimea. They had it for...
It was
kind of theirs for a long, long time. It was lost during the communist era. They're probably glad to get the Crimea back, all right? I suspect that if Russia had it to do all over again, they'd say, okay, that's enough. We're not going any further. But the people in the eastern Ukraine, the rebels, and the Russia got tangled up with them, and I wonder if Russia regrets that right now.
I think the whole thing was that May 17, which came down, which was down, and... That takes us into mix.
I'll tell you what, Yvonne, we got to let you go because the sound is just degenerating. It's so bad we can't hear we can't make sense of what you're saying right now. Yvonne, we're going to have to catch another day when we have a better connection on the telephone. Thank you for your call. All right, well, in any case, it just goes to show you, once you get into these things, all right, on one level, it seems so easy. I don't doubt it was almost irresistible for Russia to take control of Crimea. Crimea had been part of Russia for centuries until something like 60 years ago, when under the rule of communism, the Communist Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, they shifted Crimea from Russia to Ukraine. So Ukraine's claim on Crimea was kind of tenuous to begin with, but one thing leads to another. And it's always one of those situations when people, if you can steal one plum, why not steal a pineapple and maybe a watermelon to go along with it? And people just don't seem to know when to stop. And once these things evolve, once they begin to take place, hard to stop them. You know, it's hard to stop them. And that's where we are right now. This is one thing leading to another. Domino theory and the rest, that's true. So we'll see how it works out. We will watch, we will see, we'll learn, we'll understand, maybe we'll even understand. We'll watch and see. What's next, Melody?
Well, you know, this comes at a time when our military is certainly being downsized. We had a two-star general was killed in Afghanistan today. They're actually sending pink slips to, I don't know what you want to call it, I'm not a military person, but to, like, captains in the middle management.
All right.
Pink slips. Can you imagine being in Afghanistan fighting?
I can,
or
because
serving
it's.
And
because,
getting a pink slip?
Yeah, I get it.
I mean, it's amazing.
I do understand because the military is not the same as it was back during the Vietnam era and before, where the military represented the people of the United States. The military has gone, in a sense, it's to some degree privatized, because if you're going to be in the military, the only people that are in there are the people that are volunteered to go. They're not drafted. It's not my responsibility to go fight in the war in Iraq. It's not the responsibility of kids that are in college or high school to, you know, drop out and go fight in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, wherever. The war has... Our whole military has been, to some degree, separated from the people of the United States. And as a result of this privatization, and that's an exaggeration, it's not true that the Army has been completely privatized, but it's kind of moving in that direction. And we have an army that's composed primarily of soldiers that could be described as mercenaries. They're in it because they're being paid to do it. Now, I know they're not being paid much, and I'm not challenging the patriotism of the soldiers and the rest, but I'm simply illustrating, I'm arguing, that insofar as they have moved away from being the people, they are the mercenaries in a sense. Well, pink slip isn't necessarily a surprise for people that are there just for the money. It's not a surprise in an increasingly corporatized and privatized military.
Well, I find pink it slips. Shocking. I find it disturbing.
I find it
in that. Because you do have those that are fighting just for the money and so forth, but then you do have others that are over there.
I get that. It's
believing they're fighting. And for them to get the pink slips, no, there's just something wrong. And what kind of a message does that send when we're in a world that where, I mean, you have hot spots everywhere. I mean, things are about ready to explode. I believe you could view it this way, being tested. You know, any of our enemies could test. I mean, to me, I believe it's a sign of weakness. It certainly doesn't portray strength in any manner. So it's just another sign that America is falling or failing.
Yeah, I'd say
that. We're not leading.
When it comes to military, and why is that? Why do you suppose that's true relative to the military?
Well, our commander-in-chief is supposed to be the number one... And it all, you know, trickles down from there. So
that's just Obama, though. This has been going on since Vietnam. Our government, this is...
I don't think to the degree there is absolutely no respect or anything coming out from the head of Washington.
I agree with that. He amplifies the problem. I'm not saying he has nothing to do with it. But this goes back deeper than that to my mind. This goes back at least to Vietnam, which was a police action, allegedly. You know, when the military is fighting a war in Europe, as in World War II, we can rally around the flag and we get patriotic feelings and so on. When the military is sent off to engage in some... Why did we fight in Vietnam? Does anyone know? Why were we there? 50,000 Americans died. More than that. 50,000 Americans died. I have no idea how much money was spent. And does anyone know why we were there? It was the domino theory, because if we don't stop the communists someplace like Vietnam, they'll be in Topeka, Kansas before long. And the truth of the matter is they're already in Washington, D.C.
I was just going to say, now they're in Washington.
Yeah, they never got it to Topeka, but they did get to Washington, D.C., and people don't seem to pick up on that. But we have been engaged in one stupid police action after another while we try to police the world. And I'm not sure that it was ever our business. And clearly, we don't have the capacity to continue to do it. And the military are the ones that have been called on to be the world's policemen. It can't be a surprise. Nobody likes the cops all that much. Right? And they've been separated from the United States, from the people, insofar as they're the ones that have been waging these idiot wars. For what? Why were we in Iraq? Does anyone know? Weapons of mass destruction. Except there weren't any weapons of mass destruction, and we stayed there anyway for 8.5 years.
And look at it now.
We had no more reason to invade Iraq than the Nazis had to invade Poland. There's the truth of the matter. And it's part of the reason. It's not just someone like myself sitting off on the side and offering perhaps some criticism, or at least some observation, some objectivity about this. This also goes, from my perspective, to the stories about the number of soldiers who are in or returning from Afghanistan, Iraq, that are engaged, that are committing suicide. These are the guys, my opinion, my speculation, I'm not a psychiatrist or that sort of thing, but my speculation is these are the guys who really believed that they were fighting for their country. And they got over there, and over time they began to realize, no, they weren't. You know, we hear these people say they're thank a soldier for fighting for our rights. Name two rights that any man in the military rights of the American people that has been fought for and successfully defended by anybody in the military probably since World War II. Name two. Freedom of speech? Who's taking our freedom of speech away? It's not the Afghans. It's not the Iraqis. It's not the Syrians. Right to keep and bear arms? Nobody's taken that over. No one's taken that away who's overseas. That's only happening in this country. The only people threatening our rights are the people in Washington, D.C. and our state capitals. And the military is not doing anything about that. This notion that we should thank a soldier for fighting for our rights, you need to wake up and recognize what rights you have, what the source of them is, what the source of those rights may be, and recognize who is posing the principal threat. It's just propaganda. And some of the soldiers, you can sit back, it's unpleasant to make this criticism. But regardless, it needs to be done, or we're going to send another group of Americans over into some other country where they can get their brains blown out. And for what? Weapons of mass destruction? What? What are we going to do it for? These wars have been stupid. They're not defending this country. They're defending special interests that have taken control of our government. And this is debilitating for us that are just civilians and sitting here on the sidelines and watching, but it's also debilitating for the military. And there's a problem here that needs to be resolved. The American soldiers should be fighting for the United States of America, and that's all. And if anybody messes with the United States of America, we should thump them just as hard as they need to be thumped. Right? And the soldiers should do it. But we are not, those soldiers should not be engaged in police actions on behalf of special interests fighting for pipelines or whatever, control of oil and the rest of it. That shouldn't be the business of our military. They defend this country, they're heroes. They fight for special interests that have captured the government, they're not. And even the soldiers know it, and I think that lays at the foundation for a lot of the suicides. We've had more soldiers kill themselves than are being shot in the actual wars. I mean, there's something wrong here, and it won't be corrected so long as we continue to insist that anybody who puts on the uniform is some sort of a hero. People who put those uniforms on are often start with the best of reasons, and then they find out, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Well, anyway, we are the military. One of the few institutions that the American people still have a lot of confidence in, but I'm not sure that's going to continue too far into the future. We'll watch, and it'll certainly be diminished. And we'll watch, and we'll see where this goes. What else, Melody?
Are you ready to change topics?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, there was a poll out today. Americans want good highways, bridges, but they don't agree on how to pay for them. And, of course, the big deal before Congress went on vacation was to fund the federal program to help improve and fix all our highway and our transit problems. It's been on the verge of insolvency for years, and 6 in 10 Americans think the economic benefits of good highways, railroads, and airports outweigh the cost to taxpayers. But there's little support for some of the most frequently discussed options that pay for this type of construction, for new roads or the upkeep of the existing ones. So, you know, that's what I thought. That's what all those taxes for gasoline was to be for. I thought that was supposed to improve our roads and our highways and to build new ones and so forth, but our infrastructure continues to crumble, which amazes me because today Obama announced that the U.S., are we going to break here? Yeah, just a little bit. We can touch on this.
40 seconds.
Yeah, we can touch on this just a little bit when we come back. But he signed a $225 million package to replenish Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. So if their missile defense was doing such a great job, 90% successful, why are we continuing to give them more money?
I think that's exaggerated. I don't think it's that successful. They may be claiming that, but I don't believe it's that successful in terms of, I don't believe it's stopping 90% of the rockets that are being fired by Hamas or whoever into Israel. But
but the whole point is, you know, let's funnel some of that money back here.
I know. We spend our money.
Plus the money isn't there. I mean, yeah, it's just being printed.
What are we going to do about ourselves? Somebody's got to take care of the United States of America. We can't save the world. We don't need to save all the illegal aliens. Someone needs to protect the United States of America. And that's another reason why some people are perhaps critical of the military. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, give Melody a call. Got some good deals. What's next, Melody?
I got a comment in from Murray. He says, why is it that we always have plenty of funds to send overseas, but never enough here at home for needed projects for the people?
I understand that. And that's one of the things we were talking about during the break. Melody and I were talking about, you know, we watch the government get involved with one crazy project after another. And Afghanistan, what was that all about? Allegedly, the dozen or 20 people involved in the 9/11 attacks camped out in Afghanistan and trained there for a while before they came and participated in 9/11 in this country. And therefore, we invaded the nation of Afghanistan. What for? They could just as easily, what if they'd stayed, what if they'd trained in Kansas for 6 months, out in the wilds of Kansas someplace, out in some remote area? Would we invade Kansas? If 20 people trained in Mexico, will we invade Mexico because they attack the United States? There was never real justification for going into Afghanistan, never ever justification for going into Iraq. And we have the government, they come up with cock and bull stories. And we may be slow to figure it out, but we eventually realize it was a cock and bull story. They were lying to us. They didn't have any justification for this. They got their way. They came up with some extraordinary stories, and they persuaded us to go to support going to war. And once we got into it, then we get into, oh, you got to back the boys, got to back the military no matter what. If anybody really cares about protecting the soldiers and backing the soldiers, the first thing you do is make sure that they are not committed to go to war by some jackasses in Washington, D.C. who really don't care about the soldiers' lives, point one, and do care about some special interests that have little or nothing to do with the vast majority of the American people. This is all part and parcel of the loss of the middle class in this country. We have a government who doesn't care to do what's right for the majority of the American people. And it would be interesting. How many people are in the audience right now who can point to and say, well, the government does good things here, or this program is good, or that program is good? Who really believes there are any good government programs right now, with the exception of welfare recipients? If you work for a living, I'd really like to know, I'd like to hear from people who actually have a job, work for a living, make a productive contribution, not as a government employee, but actually make a productive contribution in the private sector, call us and tell us about the great and wonderful things that the government has done for the American people. I don't think there's going to be too many calls. You can reach us at 1-800-596-8191. Again, 1-800-596-8191. And tell us, if you are employed in the private sector, or you were employed in the private sector, tell me what the government's doing that's all that great for you other than welfare. If you're getting handouts, of course, you're grateful to government. I get that. But if you're working, what do you got to be? What do you have? Where's your cause for gratitude to the government? Give us a call, 1-800-596-8191. Got an article here, ceasefire in Gaza begins, and Israel says its troops are gone. This is in the New York Times. As a 72-hour ceasefire mediated by Egypt took hold Tuesday morning, Israel announced that it had withdrawn its forces from Gaza, and Hamas said it would engage in talks on lasting arrangements to keep the peace. They might just as well engage in talks on how to fly around the room like Peter Pan. Lasting arrangements to keep the peace in the Middle East? Does anyone really believe that's going to happen? Gaza officials said that 1,800 Palestinians have died in the conflict, most of them civilians. Israel says 64 of its soldiers and 3 civilians have been killed since fighting began on July 8th, just before the ceasefire went into effect at 8 a.m. this morning. A last salvo of rockets were fired toward Israel from Gaza, causing warning sirens to sound in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, while the Israeli Air Force carried out at least 5 strikes in Gaza, a customary last word before another series of conflicts between Israel and Hamas comes to an end. We've agreed to have a ceasefire, but we're still going to bomb USOBs right before the 8 a.m. ceasefire begins. No. It just tells you that the spirit of peace is nowhere close. And it reminds me of a verse in the Bible, people referring to end times and people hollering, peace, peace, but there is no peace. That is the Middle East. There isn't any peace over there. And anyone who thinks they're going to get peace, in my opinion, are delusional. I don't think it's going to happen. We'll watch and see. I don't blame people for trying, you know, but I don't think it's going to happen. Here's another one along the same lines, New York Times. Buildup makes Russia battle ready for Ukraine. We talked about the Ukraine a little earlier. Washington, Russia has roughly doubled the number of its battalions near the Ukrainian border and could respond to Kiev government's gains there by launching cross-border incursions with little or no warning. In addition, Russia has vastly expanded its firepower, increasing the number of advanced surface-to-air missiles from 14 to 8. That means there are going to be even more of these SAMs that allegedly brought down flight MH17. There are going to be more of them involved in this conflict now. Just what they need. I'll tell you what. You try to load me onto an airplane that's flying within 100 miles of Ukraine, and I guarantee you're going to have to, you're going to need some strong guys to get me on that plane, because I'm not going. All right. Again, this is just more peace, but there is no peace. There's another one from New York Times. No, Financial Trend Forecaster. Argentina coming apart at the seams. Again, and they're reporting that Argentina has defaulted on its debt. It's not the first time they've done it before, and they have more to say about it. We'll maybe get back to that a little later in the program. We've got a call from Tom from Georgia. Hello, Tom. Are you calling
Hi,
to praise?
How are you today?
Not bad. Are you calling to praise the government, or what you got for us?
Yeah, I'm calling to praise the government. I went through an immigrant settlement 8 years ago in the state of Florida. It was a federal highway project for the U.S. Naval Base there in Jacksonville. And I was a commercial fisherman. I held about $1,000 worth of federal licenses to commercial fish and about $1,000 worth of state licenses to fish. I was forced out of my commercial fishing business, and my land was basically stolen from me for nothing. That is what I get for paying the government for their permits, and that is what they've done for me.
I don't think your story is all that unusual. I don't think... You know, the government, they take it for granted they can just regulate and regulate and regulate. Go ahead.
Well, in the state of Florida, the way the state was ceded in, it was ceded under the Treaty of Amity Settlements and Limits. And the state of Florida is not supposed to be able to even limit the people of the state of Florida's right to fish or anyone else coming within the state.
Well, that doesn't. The law is, you know, what was it? I'm trying to think who made the comment. It might have been, I don't think it was Dick Cheney. It might have been Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. It might have even been President Nixon. Yeah, it probably was Nixon. He said the difficult we do immediately, the illegal it takes a little bit longer, but we get that done too. We have a nation, we have a government that has no respect for the law.
No, they definitely don't, Alfred. I fought them for 6.5 years, sent it up for appeal. The state of Florida, through their Florida Wildlife Conservation Commission, issued an open warrant for my arrest in the state of Florida to keep me from coming back into the state to appeal it.
You know, and what is that? It's just dirt.
You know,
it's unfair. It's unjust. And it's perpetrated by the government, and they don't mind. They're just, this is all about power to them. It's not about right and wrong. They could care less about right and wrong. And they wonder why people get angry. People get upset. People regard, have a low opinion of Congress and the Senate and Barack Obama. Of course we do. They're a bunch of gangsters. I don't know that you can name five of them that are serious about obeying the law.
I don't believe that they know what the law is, Alfred. If there's a fellow out there today that's still alive, his name is John, and he's down in Southwest Florida, he would know who Tom is. If he could call your show, I would greatly appreciate it, because John is one of the guys that knows more about Florida organic law than anyone else around, and he is a wonderful person to talk to. He would be a great guest for your show.
Well, I'm not absolutely certain which John you're talking about, but how old is he?
John is probably in his 70s now.
I probably know who you're talking about, and I can't think of his name. He used to partner with another guy who passed on probably about 3 years ago.
Right. His last name started with Mac.
Yeah, we're probably talking about the same people. I can't think of the name right off the top of my head, but I know who you're talking about. There's people out here that fight the system and try to expose it. They do some good work, but they don't get much publicity, and they're not generally acknowledged.
I don't know how many times that he was arrested for things that were just trumped-up charges because he had beaten the state so many times at their own game that the only way that they could try to conquer him was to continually just keep putting him in jail, stealing his property from him, all kinds of things like that, you know?
Government has become a bunch of thugs. And I know that a lot of people who work for the government say, I'm not a thug, I'm not one of the bad guys. Yeah, that's true. I get that. The majority of government people aren't behaving as thugs, but they're not doing anything to expose the thugs within their departments. They're just keeping their mouths shut, and they're going along with the program, and they're trying to pretend that I'm one of the good guys because I haven't done anything bad. I just sat there and kept my mouth shut while I know that other people are doing things that are bad. And the point is, if you're not going to stand up and resist this, it's not enough. You're not one of the good guys because you keep your mouth shut. You want to be one of the good guys, you got to stand up, speak out. You have to help to expose the injustice and the thuggery.
Right. Well, most people don't realize in the state of Florida that most of the land came in under the Swamp and Overflowed Lands Act of September 28, 1850. And there were two preemption clauses to eminent domain. I'd already been sold out by an attorney that I spoke to represent me, but I never hired him. He sold my land without a power of attorney, without witness signatures, which the statute required for that. But this fellow, John Mack, I'll call him, he helped me out, and I learned the truth. And as the old story goes, the truth will set you free. I had 14 and a half acres of waterfront property on three different waterfronts. And they gave me about $103,000 for that property. It was way up in the millions of dollars in value, plus my commercial fishing industry and other things that I had going on right there on the property, you know?
I do. I understand. And, again, it's the kind of story that we don't catch very often in the mainstream media, but the stories are around, and they're far more common than a lot of people would believe. This isn't an aberration. If it was an aberration, the story we're hearing from Tom, calling in from Georgia, if it were an aberration, somebody in government would say, wait a second, this is crazy. You can't do that. These other people in government are crazy. I don't know what happened, but we're going to correct this, and we're going to see that Tom gets justice. Nobody in government is working to see that Tom gets justice. Nobody.
Well, you know what just us means, don't you?
It means
just us. It's not the criminal justice system for nothing. The criminals get justice. It's not called the victim's justice system. You never hear about them getting justice, you know?
No, I follow what you're saying. In fact, I did an article years ago called The Prophet of Injustice, and it was one of the first great insights I had into understanding the system. And the truth of the matter is there's more money to be made through injustice than there is through justice. Justice is not profitable. You only get what you deserve. But injustice, that's where you can get rich. You can sue somebody for $500,000 because you claim you've got whiplash. You know, justice is not just for the defendants. It's not just for the plaintiffs. It's for everybody. And the system doesn't work that way. It creates injustice because it brings people in. It's another article, another story for another time. We are out of time. I want to thank you, Tom, for giving us a call and telling us your story. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.